All right, I'm going to call to order regular meeting for the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District, and let's do a roll call.
Chairman Tolles?
Present.
Director Hill?
Here.
Director White? Not here.
Nice. Very good. Would you all please stand and rise with us for the pledge? Jim, will you lead us?
Yes, ready? Salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So we're going to move on to agenda review and see if there, if we want to move forward with the order of business presented by staff or make any changes to the agenda.
No changes.
Okay, then we will proceed with the agenda as presented by staff. Let's move on to public comments. This is an opportunity for any member of the community to address the board on anything within the jurisdiction of this board for a period not to exceed 3 minutes. Please bear in mind the board will listen to all comments, but we cannot take action on any item that is not on the agenda. Is there anyone that would like to come forward under public comment?
My name is Sabrina Spears, and I reside in Arroyo Grande. I'm here to speak to you recent actions regarding district retiree annuities medical benefits. I was a 25-year employee of the district from 1986 to 2011. When I retired, it was with the understanding that my medical insurance would be covered under a resolution adopted in 2000 and in effect at the time of my retirement. The resolution had an escalating scale of paid medical coverage, and at the time of my retirement, the district's contribution was at 55%. I would like to provide some background regarding this resolution. From the time of my hire until the year 2000, the district participated in a JPA pool with the City of Arroyo Grande in order to realize a cost savings for group health insurance. As a small agency, we did not have the number of employees required for our own group plan. In 2000, the City of Arroyo Grande disbanded that JPA and made plans to contract with PERS for medical coverage. PERS offered the same contract benefits to the district with the stipulation that annuitants also be covered. Hence, the 2000 resolution, which opted for the lowest level of benefit with an escalating scale. I viewed this resolution as a promise of commitment from the district at the time of my retirement. I am fully aware that circumstances change and the district can change policy going forward. But changing those policies in arrears is unethical. The district did not consider making changes until the benefit increases became uncomfortable. I compare this to an individual who chooses a low mortgage interest payment and decides to walk away when the balloon payment is due. Retirees and annuitants were not even informed of this change by the district. They were served notice by PERS to remit 2 months' premium payments in advance within 30 days of the notice or have insurance canceled. To be fair, Mr. Karp and Mr. Sweet have been working with the retirees regarding details of those payments, which is before your board tonight. Those details should have been worked out before your board took this action. I am not here to quibble about the 15% future coverage we are losing, but I would like your board's assurance that you will stand behind the resolution you have before your board in the future. I would like to close by giving you a definition of a resolution and why it is important, why it is a formal document in government and should not be taken lightly. Resolution, a formal expression of opinion or intention made, usually after voting by a formal organization, a legislator, a club, or other group. The act of resolving, determining upon an action, a course of action, method, procedure, etc. Your constituents should be able to rely on the documents you enact. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Spears. Is there anyone else?
Hello, my name is Aaron Allen, and I'm also a retiree of the district. And I received absolutely zero correspondence from the district. I saw this on the board packet when it was on the internet, and that's why I'm here tonight. I'm really not sure what's going on, and I don't appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Is there anyone else?
Good evening. My name is Brad Snook. I'm the chair of our county's chapter of the Surf Rider Foundation. I've made some comments to the district in previous meetings about the discharge of brine from desalination, specifically regarding the Cambria desalination plant. And the former district administrator told the audience at that point, including myself, that he's got it all under control. He's a former employee of regional water quality. He understands these things. And then when I was reviewing the staff report for tonight's meeting, I noticed that the district had discharged 180% or taken in revenues for 180% more than they planned on receiving for discharging brine. I'd like to understand more about the source of that, of the brine discharge. I'd also like to understand why the district only spent 20% of revenue, of the expected revenue, on testing the brine when they discharged way more than they expected, but they tested way less than they expected. So I'd like the chair to offer a contract while I don't expect an answer tonight, maybe a contact that I could have so that I could understand more about how that happened, why that happened, and perhaps a better planning solution in the future.
Great.
So who would that be?
So I would, I think for now, it would need to be Mr. Karp. Thank you for bringing this to our attention, and then we'll try and work with Mr. Karp, and then we'll figure out how we can get something maybe on a future agenda to discuss.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Is that everyone okay with that? Okay.
Good evening. I'm Julie Tacker, and last several meetings, I've told you that I had three things that I was going to keep bringing up until they were resolved. One was the Jenkins material and getting it on the website. I believe that, and I have to double check, that the material is now on the website under the approved minutes of the meeting and meetings in which those materials were submitted. I would have thought and would have liked to have been notified that that was done or going to be done. So that opportunity was missed. I had to find out on my own. I also asked for a comprehensive accounting of the $800,000 question, and it looks like tonight on the agenda we're going to have some of that question answered. The other thing, the third thing, is I have asked, and I will continue to ask, that this board investigate Mayor Scholes and his activity with regard to meddling in personnel matters. I hope I've made myself clear, and I hope you consider agendizing the matter so that we can understand fully what you did and why you did it and what are the penalties for doing such a thing. I know that Mayor Hill has been raked over the coals for things he didn't do, and you have seen no coals. So, there is something that I have mentioned here before, mentioned at Arroyo Grande, mentioned at Oceano, haven't been to Grover Beach to talk about this, but the subject has come up for many years, And I did some research recently, and I've sent you all an opinion piece that I wrote that's now on Cal Coast Times. And it's about expanding your three-member board. In 1984, the San Luis Obispo Grand Jury recommended that this board expand to something other than three members. Their reasoning was because the larger cities should have more representation. I don't necessarily agree with that, their reason, but I do agree that the board needs to be expanded. So I've sent you all a copy, and I ask tonight that you agendize the matter, and let's bring this to the forefront. We're anticipating new administration. We're anticipating a new chief plant operator. It seems to me that the time is right to have new representation, including five or more members on your board. And thank you for your time.
Is there anyone else?
Members of the board, Colleen Kubel. I would like to ask a couple questions tonight, and this is in regards to the rate hike that occurred a couple of years ago. That was asked for, requested, and notified the public or got their input into what that was for, and it was with redundancy. And I would like to know how much of that money has come in 2 years for the redundancy and what that money has been paid for other than the redundancy. Because right now, it appears that the public was given information, was not given information, that that money was going to be used, that rate hike was going to be used for something else. And I would like to find out how this board and this district is going to fill in that 2 years of rate hike money to come up with its portion of the redundancy project and still try to get $20 million from the state when the state left that in our hands to be able to come up with that part of the money, and we don't have it, it appears. And so how are you going to get that $20 million for the redundancy? It just seems that it's going to be a far reach to make up 2 years of that redundancy money because it's been spent other places. And so I would like an answer on where it is, how much do we have in it for redundancy that is earmarked for redundancy, and where the other money that was marked for that went. And I think that's a very important thing for the public to know, because right now, if it was put before the public and in the form of a rate hike, and the public was told that that was the rate hike for the rate hike, then at this point, the public, you're in legal jeopardy because that didn't come to fruition. And so I would like to know some clarification on what is happening with that situation. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else?
Patricia Price. Very briefly, I want to back up two of the comments that were made. One was, I don't like investigations, and while I don't want another investigation, I do think it's necessary because there has been violations committed by Mayor Scholz. And if it weren't for raking Jim Hill over the coals over something that could have been resolved otherwise, an investigation that costs us $35,000-$40,000, I wouldn't even mention it. You know, it's like, don't do it again there. The other thing is the redundancy money. I asked quite a long time ago, I asked for Mr. Huebner to explain where the money for the redundancy was going, and could he separate it out so that we could see that it was there, what it was being spent for. So tonight I wanted to ask, I don't think there is, but is there a fund that would specify that amount and exactly how much has been spent and where so far? And if you can't answer that question, I'd be glad to come out and talk to the bookkeeper or the administrator or whoever could explain to me why it's not clear to me or the public where that money is and if it's been going where it's been going. I really would appreciate answers on that. Thank you.
Is there anyone else? Casey. Oops.
Shirley Gibson Halcyon, thank you for the opportunity to speak. I'm not in favor of investigating Chair Scholes. I'm against that. And as far as making the board bigger, you know, I think it's great that the board listens to all recommendations and what people want to bring up during public comment. On the other hand, I hope that you remember that you dance with the one that brung you, and that's the ratepayers that voted for you. And so I think that's what needs to be taken seriously, and I don't think that we need a larger board. And I also want to comment that some remarks were made in Cal Coast or Cal Times or one of those about Director White not having her septic or water through the district, and she's always been very transparent about that. However, she may not have the financial part, but her interests are with our community, and no one in the OCSD is elected without the community voting for him. Halcyon has less than 100 votes. I'd be shocked if we had 50 votes. So Halcyon did not elect her. The community elected her. She represents us. So that's all I've got. Thank you.
Thank you for those comments. Anyone else? Please come forward.
Hi, my name is Giselle Naylor. I'm an Oceano homeowner, and I'm a sanitation district ratepayer, and I'm an OCSD ratepayer. This is the third time that over $300 has been added to my property tax because of some claimed penalty for failure to pay my wastewater and my sewer charges, and I'm giving notice to the board. I have repeatedly asked both the OCSD and the sanitation district bookkeeper, who was Amy. Apparently that's changed. But I've also asked Mario for a breakdown of exactly which bimonthly payments I owe and which bimonthly payments my over $300 payments every property tax assessment, you know, to which months were those payments made? And I was never given a breakdown. This is fraud. The last time I called Amy, she said that the sanitation district was not allowed to charge penalty fees. The Oceano ratepayers were not delinquent in their payment. OCSD and the sanitation district were negligent in their failure to timely get out the bills, and there was already a process in place to do that. It doesn't matter, you know, whether OCSD should have continued to bill or whether they switched it to the sanitation district. They could simply have continued billing, and what they did was they put people's property ownership in jeopardy, violating the Jarvis Amendment by increasing the property taxes without notice by over $600 a month, and I'm low income. I'm talking about little farm worker housing. I'm not talking about, you know, fancy units. They probably got nailed just as well. But this is notice to you. This is intentional fraud, because several Oceano homeowners came repeatedly to OCSD, said, how come we're not getting a sanitation district bill? When is it going to be put on our bill? Who do we make our payments to? We are ready, willing, and able to make our timely payments. And we were given absolutely false information. We were delayed when both agencies knew that they were not going to bill timely, that homeowners were going to be socked without notice, that these fees, which should have been paid every 2 months in a normal fashion, were going to be slapped on the property tax bill. They never told us. I asked several times. Other Oceano property owners asked. This is intentional fraud. And there is no 11th Amendment immunity when an agency, whether they're private or they're public, they take on the business of government. Wastewater, sewer, timely and proper notice and billing. When they screw that up, 11th Amendment immunity goes out the window.
Thank you, Ms. Naylor.
Not for fraud. No 11th Amendment immunity for fraud.
Is there anyone else? Okay, let me close this to the public and bring it back. And is there someone who can maybe work with this Naylor maybe and provide that information? And it sounds like there are others in the community of Oceano that's...
We're happy to call Ms. Naylor, and we'll do so.
Hang on. They're going to follow up with you, and then you can talk about what format. We were asking staff to work with you to get you that information.
Thank you.
Okay. And then I believe Ms. Spears and Mr. Allen had brought up some concerns, and Paul, I know you were probably taking notes on that. Is that something we've been working with them on? And
yes, sir. We.
That is incorrect.
Okay. Does he?
A lie.
Hold on.
He told you a lie. He has never spoke to me.
Do we have your? They have your contact information.
I have no idea. I'm retired. They have California.
Can you provide that before you leave tonight, sir?
Sure can.
Thank you very much. Okay.
I don't appreciate him lying to you.
I appreciate that. Thank you. And I think Brad, well, Mr. Snook, I think he's already left, right? So we'll give him information. All right. And I think Ms. Kubel had asked about the rate increase, and, you know, perhaps at some point we can talk later on the comments if there's a way to provide a summary of what was, in fact, part of that discussion on the rate increase. And I think there were some other things that had been asked about on that. Okay. We're going to move on to our consent agenda tonight. This is where we take typically routine items that are considered as a group. We have two items on consent agenda tonight. The first is 5A, which is approval of warrants. The second is 5B, which is approval of minutes of November 15, 2017, do any board members want to remove any items from consent?
Karen? Not me.
Jim?
No, but I'll have a question on a couple of the items and a comment.
Okay. So do you want to ask your questions right now?
Yes, please. Regarding the warrants, I note that there's United Staffing. Could you explain what that is for?
United Staffing is the company with whom we work when we need particular labor. When we did the remodel, we brought in quite a few people to move all of the stuff in and out. We also have Ms. Bassett working with our staff on agenda nights, the night before we upload, and we've been using her also on that particular staffing.
And then I note that the warrants have been revised to incorporate tax accounting assistance. And Ms. Stockton has a warrant for 2 months, which is kind of on what I would expect to be the high side. But I don't contest that billing this evening. So I would be... willing to support the warrants this evening, absent public comment to the contrary.
Very good. Thank you. So with that, let me open this up to the public. So does anyone would like to address the consent agenda tonight?
Julie Tacker, and first to address your minutes. The minutes seem to have taken the action minute format, and your district moved away from that. And recently you've had quite a lot of absences from Ms. Austin. Mr. Hill wasn't here last time. Just lots of absences from just the board members. And when you do that, the quickest thing to get caught up for a board member is to look at the minutes. Uh-huh. So if the minutes are just saying that somebody spoke and not what they said, then it's disingenuous to the board member to have to make them go watch the whole tape or something if they're interested. So I encourage you to reinstate some snippet of the comments throughout the minutes. I have some questions about the warrants. I'm, first of all, surprised by how often we're seeing amended warrant packets. We haven't seen that. I'll have to say we didn't see that before Amy was put on leave. This has become a practice in the last 8 months, and it's there's really not enough copies for the staff or for the public, and it's difficult to catch the changes on the fly. One of the things that I noticed, there's an awful lot of yellow with apparently wrong coding. So how does somebody code the account incorrectly over and over again? How does that happen when it's you have Amy's back, Faye Russo's working on the books, and Mario is also working on the books? So you've got all these great minds, but we're still seeing mistakes. One that I just mentioned, Mario's got a $250 boot allowance, and if he's working in the office, does he need boots? Or if he needs boots, then maybe Amy needs some boots too. So I'd like to understand that better, because he's not working in the field as he was. Faye Russo is still there. Mary's there. I think the temporary agency, some of these expenditures, and I mentioned this before, should be going away because Amy is back. And Amy's expertise, we didn't see these kinds of mistakes. I couldn't help but notice that it appears that Mr. Huebner has retired from this district. And I don't know, maybe I could get an explanation. If he had been fired for cause like he should have been, would you be married to him like this for the rest of his life? Because I think you can find cause that could be retroactive, and that we could actually do away with this expense that's in perpetuity, or however long he lives. My last thought is, I do object to Ms. Stockton's legal bill. Even though it is 2 months, it's over $10,000, and we have a legal team that should be about $6,000 a month total. So we're not out of the litigation business yet.
Thank you. Is there anyone else?
Shirley Gibson, Houston, ratepayer. That was kind of a lot of ugliness about Mr. Huebner again. I think he's gone. You signed whatever when he separated. I think that should be let go. It is what it is. And then all the smallish detailed complaints about staff, et cetera, I'm sick of hearing that. And I give credit to staff and the extra help they're receiving in a time of that there was a lot of conflict and
things were unorganized and people have done work and made up work for other people. And I think they're to be credited for that. And, you know, I think it's a struggle when you go through a big transition. So, you know, small mistakes can be made, but they can be corrected, and the staff needs to be supported. It's pretty simple. Thank you.
Is anyone else?
When Mr. Huebner left, he left a real mess. And we're clearing it up now. And I know we will clear it up. It's going to take time. But the mess that we are in and have been in was directly from his action. And I do resent paying anything else to him. And if we can retroactively go back and somehow find cause to not pay him anymore, I would be really in favor of that. Thank you.
Patty Welch, Arroyo Grande. It just amazes me that I cannot come to meetings for some time, and yet I hear we still don't like the minutes. We're still talking about Mr. Huebner. I would really like to see the district move forward. I don't know what it's going to take, but boy, would that be refreshing.
Anyone else? Casey, and the one come forward. Let me close this to the public. And we are at a point of either discussion or someone wants to make a motion.
In terms of discussion, I do agree with the commenter that the legal bills are higher than I would have hoped for. I wasn't here at the last meeting. But hopefully that those will come down to the realm that we have pretty much expected and originally budgeted for this year. I think I also agree that it would be helpful if just a brief comment about whether the person spoke in favor or in opposition or what the substance of the comment was very briefly in the minutes would be helpful. And I think we've talked about that before and agreed that we would do that. And I see several places where it just said provided comment, but doesn't indicate whether it was in favor or opposed to the item or any brief explanatory note. So I would hope that we could, I think the public being the boss would like to see that, and I think we've talked about it previously, and I don't think it's really too much to ask that we do that.
Karen, you have anything?
I make a motion we approve the consent agenda.
I'll second that.
Okay, and then... yeah, I agree. We're not going to get beyond action minutes. We're not going to do a full summary, but I think in the future, if we can just say someone spoke in support or in opposition to, I think that's sufficient. I think we can do that without having to write a major...
I don't think anyone's looking for a treaty. Yeah. So we're looking for a brief.
Agreed. Okay. There's a motion. There's a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries. All right. So let's move on to our action items, and this is the first one is item 6A. This is fiscal year 2016-17 financial review. Mr. Carr.
Yes, Chair and board members, we brought before you a year-end financial review that has looked at the district's finances from two different approaches, one being the accrual-type basis, which you normally see from month to month, and the other one being a cash accounting basis. And we've reconciled using both methods. We've placed tabulated data using the actual numbers. All of the reconciliations that have been performed over the last, the period of discussion here have all been previously reported to you on monthly reports, and we've brought those into a spreadsheet to show you how they work now, and we've tried to compare the two. We're trying to give you the information that you've been requesting for several months. We think that we've accomplished that, and we're here to answer questions regarding our report. So with that, I'll leave it in your hands, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Let's see if there's any questions. Karen, you have any questions?
Not really. I'm assuming that Mr. Hill will, though.
Yeah. Jim?
Actually, I don't have questions at this time. I've not been able yet to look at information that was previously presented to the board and reconcile that with this. So I'll reserve comment on it, that this is a receive and file rather than an action item. So.
Okay. And I don't have any questions, so let me open this up to the public.
Julie Tacker and I just have to object to the $40,000 over budget you went on legal. There is a question that I have, and it relates to the $4 million under the $4 million over the redundancy project is now. I'd like to understand if Bartle Wells' rate study was in error, was the Kennedy Jenks number in error that they built the rate study on at that time, or did $4 million come later with the Coastal Commission's requirements? That's what I'd like to understand, is where did this $4 million come from? And I wish I could know that answer now, because if you have, I would have thought that the design work that's coming is actually going to add more to the cost because it's going to be refined. So is that $4 million a snapshot at what the end price is going to be, or are we in for something even larger? So.
Okay. Is there anyone else?
I'm also concerned about the legal fees, but I will ignore that since that's going to be addressed, I'm sure, by others. There's one small item here that caught my attention. On the P&L, for the accrual basis P&L, 19-8032, automotive maintenance. Spent $350 out of a budget of $7,000, that's 5%. And that sounds like something that would concern me over a course of a year to not be maintaining vehicles, and I'm wondering if that's a deferred maintenance item or something else that's going on. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Holtz. Anyone else?
I would like to make note that although the budget expenses are not far off of our actual expenses, as stated in the past, legal fees far exceeded budgeted amounts at the expense of training and particularly equipment and maintenance. And I'd also like to see a better accounting for redundancy. The rate increase was to fund the project, and as a ratepayer, I can't see where the money goes. A key objective of the rate study was to recommend service charges adequate to fund future operating and capital needs, including construction of the required redundancy project. I'd like to see an accounting of the funds and at least a five-year revenue and expense plan that shows that the rate study projections are still attainable. Thank you.
Is there anyone else? Okay, I'm going to close it and bring it back to the board. Mr. Karp, I know we had discussed the redundancy project and originally estimated at $19 million. I think the last time we had a report at the, I believe, last meeting that estimated number had gone to $23 million.
That's correct, sir.
Can you provide more information?
Yes, when Bartle Wells did their original financial plan, as John Wyckoff from Kennedy Jenks reported, the project was less expensive. At that time, we had envisioned the project being constructed about 2-3 years ago. And, of course, that hasn't happened. We're trying to accommodate our member agencies who are interested in studying some additional work, and it's not something we shouldn't do. It's something we should do is study these things. And that was brought to your advice at the last regular board meeting. We are just as concerned about not only the redundancies, but every other maintenance function and vehicles, equipment, all of that. And we feel that financial plans ought to be reviewed every 5 years or so, and it's appropriate at this time to do so. We are fine-tuning the design on the redundancies, and costs are changing almost as we sit here tonight. They're probably changing, but I don't mean to be flippant about that. But the project cost envisioned hasn't significantly changed, and the price is now significantly more. Bartle Wells used the material from Kennedy Jenks when they did the report, and when we have the review done, which you authorized at your last meeting, that we would re-review our finances, we expect to consider that. But I don't believe we'll be looking at a project the same size as that estimated. Actually, that was estimated last time I was working for you about 4 or 5 years ago. So I apologize for that, but I don't know that I can do much.
Yeah, well, I think that's good information because the board did give direction to move forward with
yes.
the redundancy project and have a finance plan to that. Because
that's correct.
A lot of these same issues had been brought up, and so we have made a commitment. We're trying to get information and be transparent in how we're going forward.
I will add that the rate increase is performing as anticipated. The issue of the brine we'll discuss with the gentleman who spoke tonight, but historically we have always estimated the brine revenues way below what they've come in. Now, they have increased over time, but over the last couple, 3 years, the brine discharge and revenues have not significantly changed. We've had a few additional customers, but the amount of brine being discharged is similar to last year and the year before. When Bartle Wells studied those revenues for not only brine, but every other, you know, the interest and all that, they were considering that interest and other revenue at the level of $150,000 a year. And over the last few years, the brine alone is over $300,000. We've not changed the budget. We know the brine could dry up overnight. They could just say, we're not doing that anymore. We're going to discharge into a brine well like the oil wells do. But we're continuing to estimate conservatively in that particular area.
Very good. And then I think Mr. Holt had brought the question, asked a question regarding, I think the line name was 198032 regarding auto maintenance and whether there had been deferred maintenance.
Yeah, I didn't come prepared to speak on that, but part of our report indicates that there has been a considerable amount of deferred maintenance at the plant. We don't feel that that is something we should do, but we've been in kind of a state of flux with the staffing as brought to our attention again tonight. There were a lot of people offline that would normally be doing maintenance, and some of that maintenance has not been done. It has, however, been carried over for the upcoming FY, and we do plan to maintain our levels of maintenance, and moving forward, we intend to keep our maintenance schedules on schedule. We apologize to the ratepayers that we hadn't done that in the last, but you know, there were situations where if someone is off from work for 6 months, they're not, you're maintaining the plant, and that's not their fault.
Fair enough. Thank you. All right, so this is, Jim, did you have any other comments?
Yes, thank you. The early on with the rate increase, I requested that we account for the funds because the rate increase was specifically requested for the redundancy project, that we account and set up a separate account to keep track of that funding so that we can account for it to the ratepayers. That was the basis of the rate increase, and I've not seen that. It's engendering questions, which we've seen this evening, and I would hope that we can establish an account to better account for the monies that we're receiving from the rate increase, and that are that should be dedicated to the rate increase per the representations that the district made to our ratepayers. With respect to the brine issue, I suppose on the one hand pleased that we have exceptional revenue, but I am sensitive also to Mr. Snook's comment about testing, and to make sure that if we have more than anticipated revenue from brine, I would expect to see testing commensurate with the increase in revenue. Finally, I have to comment again on what I view to be unconscionable legal fees over the last year, not necessarily from our in-house counsel, but from external counsel. And I'm hoping that money earmarked or should have been earmarked for redundancy wasn't, dare I say, squandered on unconscionable legal fees. Those are my comments, Mr. Chair.
Okay. So let me just basically say, and I think one of the speakers alluded to this, and basically what staff has reported, if everyone hasn't seen the staff report, it's saying district revenues remain in line as projected. And it looks like there are, obviously, as you start to track expenditures, in certain months we're taking in revenues, and other months where the expenditures are a little higher, but we do reconcile that toward the end of the year. And so I think this is, for the most part, and I would agree, the increase in legal fees are higher than anticipated, and we are all hopeful that those will come back down to what is perceived as normal. But I would say overall, according to this report, expenses are certainly, or revenues are certainly in line, and it seems like staff has done a good job in most areas of keeping the expenditures down. So this is a, and then of course redundancy, and we're going to get a better accounting of that, and it's always dangerous when we make statements like this before we have a chance to do an accounting and give the impression or to imply that those funds have been used for anything other than what was intended. The rate increases and had other items in there, not just redundancy. So thank you for making that distinction. So as we provide more information, let's get the correct information out there so that folks who are truly seeking the facts will have the facts. So I think with that, this is a receive and file. There is no further board action required on this. We're then moved to item 6B, which is recruitment of district administrator contract approval, and we'll provide some input on recruiters. And Mr. Carr.
Board Chair and board members, we have tonight an opportunity to comment on the materials we'll be using to recruit our new district administrator, and we have a sample that had been used prior within the packet for you. We also have Pam Derby, who is a representative of CPS HR Consulting, to take your input regarding the brochure, qualifications, the comments that you had previously given us to pass on to her. We have a contract which we need to act on to start her on her quest. One would say that maybe before we let her start talking to us, we ought to approve the contract, but I think that she'll understand if you let her make her presentation and then deal with the contracts and the brochures thereafter. So with that, I would like to introduce Pam Derby tonight, and we can use the microphone up front, and she's here to listen to you, and I'll let her take it from here.
Mr. Irby, you have the floor.
Good evening, Chair Scholes, Directors Hill and White. Thank you for having me. Just to renew your knowledge of CPS, CPSHR is actually a not-for-profit joint powers authority. We are a quasi-governmental agency that provides HR services for just public agencies. And in doing this search, redoing this search, we will only be charging reimbursable expenses. There will be no professional fees charged as we move forward. I have received some of the comments that you had about the brochure. As you know, last time we did sit and talk about what we would advertise for, and I believe that those are the things that we used in the brochure. But it appears that we want to address some of those things and change some things. So we're happy to do that. I'm here to hear your feedback and answer any questions you might have. Talk about schedule, et cetera.
Okay. Let's see if there's any questions. Karen?
Well, scheduling would be something I want to hear about.
Okay. Pam, you want to, well, I guess we haven't established a schedule, but maybe...
No, we have not. In looking at the calendar, because we do have most of the brochure done, I shared with Mr. Karp and Mr. Sweet that if we could possibly start advertising next week sometime, I would suggest that we put an open until filled date on this because, as you know, there could be some challenges in recruiting this individual. And then a first review of resumes date of Friday, January 19th. That would give us at least 3 weeks after the holiday season to also do outreach to candidates. Leading into December, it's difficult. Many people are not looking at these opportunities. And so that's what I would suggest. After that, we would be doing screening interviews of the candidates that meet the minimum qualifications and then providing a board with the client report and letting you know which candidates we think should move forward to your process, as we did last time. The hope would be to have someone in place probably around the 1st of March, middle of March. That's pretty aggressive at this point, considering that we're going to lose most of this month, but it's possible. But the reality is we have to have a good pool of candidates for that to happen. I would suggest that you're going to have to look at an increased salary from what was considered last time to make that happen. Mm.
Jim?
The two comments that I have on the materials that would be circulated would be, one, emphasize what I would hope that we could get someone who had prior wastewater treatment experience. I think hopefully we've learned our lesson on that with the last recruitment. Also, I would look for someone with a facilitative management style, and we certainly did not get that. So those would be major concerns that I have.
Thank you.
I have some concerns about the brochure.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I don't like the picture of San Luis Obispo in there. I guess I'm just a little too sensitive about where we are and where they are. And you the whole community is all about, I mean, the district is fairly complete, but the whole community is all about San Luis Obispo and Cal Poly, and I suppose we need that to draw, but I don't see it as being completely honest.
And we can certainly change that description. The pictures were provided to us by the district, but we're happy to entertain any pictures that you provide to us, and we can certainly change the description to more accurately...
Well, I don't know
just the district rather than San Luis Obispo County.
Or maybe put the district first and maybe...
Certainly.
And
we can change the order of things as well.
And there are some technical things. I think the budget things, and there was some deadlines and things like that about the redundancy project that are... There's just a little bit of things here and there. I think the retirement thing is changed. Of course, the application process needs different... Or is that February 8th? January 8th is what you thought. That was last year. There's a lot of little things. I'm being picky. I'm sorry.
No, not at all.
And it's just... There's one little thing that drives me crazy. You don't have... You'd say typical... duties, and then you have your tenses different here. It's just... I mean, I'm being picky, but it's just something I noticed. And the picture of a Roy Grandy is nice, but I think maybe we got to identify that that's a Roy Grandy. We got to identify this is the sewer plant, and I believe this is the plant office. I mean, you don't really know what these pictures even are. I mean, the front, you can kind of figure out that's the sewer plant. Anyway, now that my... Trivial.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
We'll attend to that.
Do you think we actually could get enough candidates by January 19th? Or are we pushing the window even that way? Because I'm thinking, you know, you're not going to get any interest until after New Year's is over. That gives you
that it
18,
is
17 days.
It is aggressive. My druthers would actually be the end of January, but I know that they're... are some concerns about whether you can bring on an interim, possibly. I know that Mr. Karp and Mr. Sweet's contract is running out, and so that's a consideration as well. I have spoken to them and let them know that we certainly know individuals who you might consider as an interim that take interim posts. You know, we have a very close association with CSDA and know many people through that organization. And I would suggest, you know, hopefully you can see two or three of those people if you decide to go that route and actually interview them as well.
Okay. And I'm just one person here.
So, Pam, can you expand on your statement about having to increase the salary? I mean, can you give us a little bit more information on that? What's the rationale behind that?
Well, you're way below what the standard would be, and so I think you really need to advertise up to 165 to 175 to attract the kind of individual you're looking for. The reality is there to have someone who has the experience you want. Many of them may come from if they come from a much smaller district, they haven't managed staff oftentimes. They're running, a part-time small district type of situation. And you need to make it attractive. You've had some negative press the last couple of years, which it needs to make, you need it to make it palatable for someone who's maybe making 145, 150 to make that move. And, you know, a 5% jump is not going to do it. It's going to need to be something in the, $10,000 to $20,000 range.
Okay. And Director Hood, I mentioned someone with a facilitative management style, and I'm just trying to get a sense of, I know that there are programs out there called facilitated leadership and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've dealt with a situation like that, if that's something you can write into, whether it is part of experience or part of the ideal, what we're looking for in an ideal candidate?
Absolutely. We can put that into the ideal candidate profile. And there are behavioral questions we can ask to ascertain that. We can have the candidates take a leadership assessment profile test that will help us with that. We have an IO psychologist who can also review those and give you a breakdown of what they think. So there are several different ways we can get at that.
Okay. One of the things we had talked about is there a process in which we could include the community or community panel, not that they would select that individual, but for them to give some feedback or some input early on So is there a process that includes that, and then what would that do to the timeline?
So there are a couple of different things. If you want input as far as the ideal candidate profile and what you're looking for in a candidate, we can easily do an online survey that then would be anonymous. We could send a link out. It could be posted on the websites, on the district's website, so that people could go in and provide us with, the public could go in and provide us with feedback. We did that with the Coastal Commission, and we received over 600 responses.
Wow.
And so it's very effective. We can provide you with all of that feedback. Then you have it. It also is good feedback for the next district administrator to see what the public thought this individual should be, and for development purposes. If you want to have a panel of individuals that actually talks to candidates, there certainly are ways that you can, when you're doing your first round of interviews, possibly have a community panel that doesn't rate candidates, but they do provide you feedback. Mm-hmm. We would provide them questions that are appropriate. Obviously, I need to sit in on those to ensure that human resources practices are followed, but that happens quite often. We do that in many types of searches.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I don't think we have any other questions. So, with that, let me open this up to the public to see if there's anyone that would like to comment on this item.
Julie Tacker, and first with the brochure. Well, first let me just say, I still think you only need a part-time administrator. And part of why I believe that is because, and what's in this brochure, at the time you went out previously, in this brochure from 2016, you were looking for someone to take on the current capital projects. Out of four projects that are listed here, three are complete. The grit removal system, the bar screen system, and the sewer bridge in Arroyo Grande are all done. So the redundancy project is your main deal. And you're still going to have to hire contract managers. That was all explained to you by Mr. Sweet when this item was before you a few weeks ago. So even if you get a full-time administrator, they're not going to do contract management on the redundancy project. You want a specialist for that. So,
oh my God.
I think what I recall needing to be done down there, the next big project, is the next digester cleaning. So once that's done, it's done. Only the redundancy project is really the biggie that you need. I still think you only need a part-time manager. The things that I'd like to see in a manager are at least laid out fresh and right up front. They need to be Brown Act compliant and very savvy and understand it. The California Public Record Act, they have to understand it and comply with it. They have to take their harassment and ethics training. The law says within the first year. They need to take that. The district should require it immediately, especially in the climate we're in, with harassment all over the news every day. I think that your district needs to be on top of that. No way do you go with a salary increase. Go out at the salary that you have. I'd like it lower, but that's just me. Go out with what you have. If the pool of candidates is not what you like, perhaps raise the rate and go out again. But interview all candidates and do not provide moving expenses. The other thing
can
to
you
consider.
Wrap up.
Yes,
30 seconds to
thank
wrap
you
up.
For the extra time. Another thing to consider is maybe not
this kind of recruitment. Maybe it's an RFP and you look for a contractor. And let the contractor tell you what the job's going to cost instead of you putting out the number and having a whole host of varied skills applying for the job.
Is there anyone else?
Ron Holt or Royal Grand again. As part of the interview process, I think applicants should be given a warning about the history of the SSLO-CSD and the likely ongoing saga of scrutiny and micromanagement by concerned ratepayers and citizens and other members of the public. It is unfortunate that given the history of our past two permanent administrators, it will take time to overcome the fear of mismanagement and possible corruption. Candidates should be aware of this aspect of the job so they don't get in over their heads if their egos are too tender to handle criticism or their skills in communications inadequate. We can and have supported competent administrators such as Mr. Karp, Mr. Sweet, Mr. Clemens, but even they get some scrutiny. No matter what the resume says, there will be a period when a new administrator will have to prove themselves. And they should know that before they apply to or before they get hired for the job. Thank you.
Is there anyone else?
Shirley Gibson, Halcyon. Thank you again. As I said before, dance with the one that brung you, and that's the ratepayer, not other people outside the district making recommendations. I don't think there are going to be any saints running for this office, so I think we're in trouble. I know the presentation, she mentioned the negative press. Well, I think she understated that a little bit, and I'm sure anyone applying for this job would look at these meetings, and if they watch tonight, they'd see where the community is still trying to get back $37,000 from the last administrator. So I don't think that's a very positive thing. So as long as there's so much negativity, I think that's a problem. And I think that you will have to raise the salary just to compensate for that. In other words, the people are costing us money. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Patricia Price. What I know is an engaged public is a benefit, and if anyone is applying for this job, they could watch the meetings of the past couple of years, hit and miss if they wanted to, or right on through and see what the comments were and if they were valid. I feel that public comment has been right on for the last couple of years. We've come forward, we've asked questions, issues have not been addressed, we've demanded that changes be made, they haven't been made, and now we've got a mess. So anybody coming in, if they're willing to work with an engaged public who will keep them honest, I don't think that's a problem. That's the kind of person we want. We don't want somebody who's afraid of public comment or public scrutiny. I mean, we're the boss. We should be up here saying, answer this question. I have a question. I haven't been getting my questions answered for the last year and a half. I have not been satisfied with the information I'm getting. I'm not getting the information. So if anybody wants to come in and administer, I don't want to raise the salary. I think we were paying way too much for what we had. Let them come in and prove themselves, and then we'll back them 100%. I'm willing to back somebody who's doing good by good people 100%. And I'll stand up and battle anybody who's screwing over the people that are doing a good job and are being honest and ethical. So, thank you.
Is there anyone else?
I know somewhere in the country there's an association, and all they do is, you know, they're comprised of a collection of people whose experience is running a sanitation district. You know, I'm sure there's unions, associations, joint conferences and committees that all they are is comprised of experts in whatever field you need to be filled. And so my question to you, and I'm throwing this out, you know, to see if you've actually answered this question or addressed it, is have you identified those associations or unions or specialized groups that have specialized knowledge in running a sanitation district? I mean, from the ground up, from maintaining the pipes to treating the water, that's who you need to advertise to and, you know, send out your requests for proposals or, you know, notice that there are job vacancies opened rather than just, you know, throwing it out to, like, the L.A. Times, like OCSD district officers did when we were hiring a general manager, they, you know, or people for the water maintenance department. They just sent stuff out to, like, the New York Times. That's not specific enough. So that's my suggestion.
Thank you.
Ron Arnelson, I think one of the things we've overlooked is in the past we've had a couple of very good plant managers. Chuck Ellison was very good. I think John Clemens was a great guy. They both did a great job. And if you have two people like that running the plant manager, you do not need a full-time district administrator. That's totally my opinion. But I think if you have some decent people working at the plant, these people right here can probably tell you more than I do. These two retired annuitants right here can probably put more input on this situation than anybody in the room.
Is there anyone else?
Colin Kubel. Just my input. I have been on oral boards, hiring situations for many years, and the most important thing is after you get the requirements of their skills set and narrow down the field, then the second round of interviews needs to find someone who is transparent, honest, and truly cares about employees and their working conditions. When you have somebody like that who can work with employees and the board and the public, that's who you want, and that's how this whole hiring process needs to be narrowed down to those qualifications, period. And that's the most important thing, because then you come out with a successful organization. Thank you.
Is there anyone else?
Sorry, I can't resist. I know you're looking for somebody new, but what's going on right now, when they see that you are a board that doesn't stay true to their commitments and their promises, why would they come here? What you did to retirees, you know, you're not standing by your prior commitments. Why would I come here?
Is there anyone else? Seeing no one come forward, let me close and bring it back to the board. So I think we've given input on the brochure and what we wanted to see in the candidate. Unless there are there any other
yes, comments? there's a request that you approve the contract, which is primarily for expenses.
I was getting there.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But that's okay. Thank you for that.
Don't we have to decide on the salary?
Can we ask some additional questions or make additional?
Yeah,
comments?
As a matter of fact, let's. Yeah, you can certainly go ahead, Joe.
I would ask Ms. Derby if. What her opinion is on the ability to hire a part-time administrator.
I think you're looking at an annuitant in that situation who could put in their 960 hours a year. really, other than that, you're going to have a difficult time. So they can work their 960 hours, and that may change in the future. PERS has always, you know, has been changing that from one year to the next and cracking down on the annuitant situation. But if you hired a part-time administrator, that's where you would have to look.
Okay, thank you.
Anything else?
That was my question.
So, Pam, can you address the, I think Ms. Naylor talked about associations or group that would be targeted for this recruitment. Maybe you can expound on that a little bit.
Certainly. Of course, we do all of those things. As I said, we do outreach to CSDA. We also have the list of every treatment operator in the state, because we do have a loose state association, and so we're able to get the names of all of those individuals. Our database is around 5,000 of water treatment people around the country. One of the problems that we have in California, obviously, attracting people from other states and certainly to this area, is the cost of living. We do look in other places, Seattle, Portland, where people can make the jump, that the housing bubble isn't quite so much. The reality is, California, we have so many regulations that are different than other states that you're best served by someone who is already has those qualifications in California. But we advertise with all of those associations. We will do an initial email blast, as I said, to those 5,000 people, and then we'll do follow-up with, you know, another 100 to 150 that we're, you know, following up and doing another personal contact with those individuals that we think might be a good fit, and trying to get referrals from people. So it's a very hands-on process. And we'll be looking at all those types of candidates for you.
Okay, very good.
One organization might be the California Water Environment Association.
We do it, advertise with them as well, and CASA and AQUA, just there are people sometimes on the water side. They tend to make more, but we do advertise in all of those areas.
Okay, very good. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Carpa is... as someone who people have spoken favorably of your performance and what you've done for this district, I know that when you came forward before, there was a discussion of whether we move forward with full-time or part-time, and I thought there was a recommendation that had come from yourself and Mr. Sweet regarding that item.
Yes, we had recommended the full-time. The annuant thing is becoming more complex as time goes by, and I don't know that you can rely really on that. I mean, we're doing a six-month deal. We didn't know whether that would work out, but that's, I think, it's just not predictable anymore.
Fair enough. Okay. Karen, do you have anything else?
No, I just wondered about salary.
Oh.
Do we, I mean, does it have to be a part of the
We can certainly advertise as compensation is negotiable, and that's what we did the last time. We felt that it was necessary. There was a board member who felt that you shouldn't go over $125,000, and I recommended at the time, I said that's just not feasible, but we can advertise it, and that way you can, as of January 1, we can't ask people what their current salary is. But the reality is that they're public sector individuals, everyone that would be applying for the most part. We can go to Transparent California and find out what they're making now.
Yeah.
So we will still be able to ascertain their current salaries. We just can't ask for it anymore because of AB 816.
Okay. So I would just say, while I'm sure Ms. Tacker and I don't agree on a lot of things, I would say that perhaps we do go out and advertise at the salary level we had, and let's see what kind of interest we get. At least that would be my thought of a practical way to go forward. I don't know if that's going to add time to ultimately who this process, but I think to be prudent, that might make sense. Do you have any thought on that?
I would agree.
Okay.
Wouldn't it be more effective in getting people to say it'd be negotiable? I'm just thinking of getting candidates, because if they see that bottom line and say, nope, not going to go there no matter what.
So could you advertise it as negotiable, but then we've set the cap of the salary range?
Certainly.
Which
and we will let you know what their current salaries are. I think it's, if we go out as negotiable, I do agree with Director White that if we you set it there, it is going to curtail the pool. But we can do that, and you can see what's out there.
Okay.
That's why I suggested doing it open until filled, so that it doesn't look like we've had a failed recruitment. It's just that we've continued the recruitment.
Okay. All right.
I'd support that, yeah.
So what's basically before us is we've given comments, we've asked questions, so now it's a matter of the contract with CPS HR Consulting.
That was, the expenses would be about, what, $5,000, we thought? Something like that.
So we want to make a motion on
that? I'll make a motion that we approve a contract with CPS HR Consulting, Attachment A, and I guess that's all I need to add.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah.
I'll second it.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion... there's a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion, let's do a roll call.
Chairman Schultz?
Yes.
Director Hill?
Yes.
Director White?
Yes.
Unanimous.
Very good. Thank you. And I do want to make a statement just to say that we all appreciate and engage public. I mean, that's the essence of these meetings. And so we want to encourage people to come here and speak up, and I'm not saying you have to agree with us or otherwise. We expect those comments. But just to restate, there's also 37,000 ratepayers, so folks who don't come here talk to us when we are out and about as well. So I think we want to make sure that everybody's voice is heard, and I understand the decisions that get made. People won't necessarily agree with them all the time, and we're trying to do it in a transparent and a fair manner. I would also say that... we are in a position, and I've heard folks tonight say we need to find a way to move beyond and being able to hire a district administrator as well as a new superintendent, or that person hiring a new superintendent, does afford an opportunity to get a team that will work together in the best interest of this district and the community. And so I think that's where we're trying to go, and I think this is another step in a positive direction forward. Okay?
Mr. Chair, if I might, I have to say that sounds good, but I haven't seen it. I think we had an individual who was not willing to work with someone who demonstrated good performance at the district in terms of our superintendent of the plant. The plant had been run well for a period of time, and the individual we got was, as I indicated earlier, anything but a facilitative leader, and I am very nervous that while it sounds good that we want to have we certainly do want to have staff cooperating and working together. That's not what we had previously.
Without relitigating all that, I would agree, and I think that was the essence of the comments. So let's move forward. And we all have a role in this. So with that, we're going to move on to item 6C, which is consideration of cost of living adjustments and benefits. Mr. Kerr?
Yes, Board Chair and Board Members, we have before you a resolution that will bring into continuity the remaining two employees at the district which are not represented, and it will basically grant to them a COLA, cost of living adjustment, and the similar benefits with regard to compensation for health benefits, holidays, and if you were satisfied with the approval of the SIU agreement, and you desire to bring into conformance the other two employees who were not operators, that you may recall that they represented only the operators, then I would recommend that you adopt this resolution to bring that all of the staff on to equity.
Okay, very good. Any questions of Mr. Karp?
No.
No.
No? Let me open this up to the public. Anyone want to address this item? Okay, seeing no one come forward, I'm supposed to bring it back to the board. And I'll be looking for a motion on this item.
I make a motion that we approve Resolution 2017-381, granting cost of living adjustments and modifications to benefits to non-represented full-time employees.
I'll second that.
Okay, there's a motion, there's a second. If there's no additional discussion on this motion, Sue, roll call vote, please.
Chairman Schultz?
Yes.
Director Hill?
Yes.
Director White?
Yes.
Very good, thank you. Let's move on to item 6D. This is consideration of the district contributions for retired annuitants enrolled in CalPERS health benefits under the Public Employees Medical and Hospital Care Act. Mr. Karp.
Yes, Board Chair and Board Members, we have before you an action that we propose to keep constant the current level at which you have contributed to the annuitants retirement health insurance. It's capped at that level. The proposal is capping the level at 2017 premiums. Each individual has got a formula to their name, which includes the number of years which they have been in the system. It includes a maximum increase of $100 per year. And there are a few other CalPERS intricacies that are involved. The proposal is to maintain current levels for each of the recipients. CalPERS will not handle this for the district. At least we have not convinced them that that's the honorable thing to do and the legal thing to do at this time. So what we proposed is that the district will run this thing and make the first payments so that we don't miss any deadlines in making these subsidies, which you have previously paid to the employees in time adequate for them to be able to make the payments that were brought to your attention by a couple of the retired employees who have spoken tonight. There has been some discussion about using the premium rates from 2017 rates versus 2018 rates. The rates for 2017 are actually higher for 6 out of the 7 employees than the 2018 rates. If you go to the 2018 rates, you'll be freezing at a lower level your subsidy for those annuitants, except for the one employee who would come out a little bit better. I'll leave it at that. I'm sure there's input since we have some of the beneficiaries of this action in the in the ratepayers area here, and we're happy to turn it over to you, Mr. Chair, for further consideration.
Very good. Thank you. Let's see if there's any questions. Jim, any questions? Do you have questions?
No.
Jim?
I don't have any questions.
Okay. Let me open this up to the public. Does anyone from the public have any comments on this item?
And this is my first interaction with the district in this matter. I don't know how it will affect me. And I really would ask the board to not vote on this tonight and table it until we can get some more information about actually what the costs are going to be, what cost savings are going to be. You know, you might be doing this for... a minimal savings. I have no idea. I came from CalPERS today. I had an appointment to change beneficiaries. They told me that as a class, as the group of retired employees always have a class, can bring class action against the district if thought that that needed to happen. I just have no information. I can't make an informed decision or comment, actually. Thank you.
Thank you. Sure.
I have been speaking to Mr. Karp and Mr. Sweet, and they have been trying to work with me. I appreciate that. Thank you. I understand where Aaron's coming from. I think this resolution needs to go forward so we our payments are made. You know, we have, as of right now, the what the district has been contributing is coming out of my January 1st check. And I didn't know that. I wasn't notified of that until I went on PERS, my PERS page, and found that out. I don't know if the other retirees know this at this point. We need to go forward with something since you've already changed the contract with PERS. I agree with Mr. Karp. Some of those numbers probably aren't correct. We can go in and change those later. I do think it was unethical. I think you should have, if you wanted to go forward, but the retirees should have been left where we were at. So my question to you is, if this resolution goes forward, what assurances do we have that the board will stand by this new resolution, since you're not standing by the resolution that was on the books when we retired? When you retire and you make those decisions, you can only go with the information is put in front of you. And then to find out that, you know, that's changed and that resolution didn't mean that, and we can do whatever we want, is disconcerting in any walk of life. So we want to get the figures figured out. I understand that, and I understand that will take some time. But what I want from the board is some assurances that you won't change afterwards, and why this resolution that was on the books when we retired is now being thrown out. And so maybe that's a question to you, agencies do that all the time. They change. They have bargaining units. I don't understand with PERS. I've dealt with PERS for 25 years. I know they're difficult to deal with, but I did it. And different agencies have different bargaining units, and they're able to manage that. I don't know why the district, as a small agency, aren't able to go forward with the annuitants versus your new agreement with a union. You know, that happens all the time. It concerns me that the payments aren't going to come out of our benefit check every month, that we're going to have to rely on the district, and management's changing. You're making those promises now, and the administrators are working with us now, but who's to say that the next administrator will? So when they come from PERS, and we know that's the check that I get, and that's how I'm going to pay my bills, if we don't have those insurances, that's my concern. The 15% at this point, you know, that's 15%. That's what's promised. We're not going to get that. But I need the assurance that it's going to come. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Is there anyone else?
Julie Tacker, and I think I need an explanation of kind of how we got here. What was the driver behind all of this? I know in the past the citizens have said that the benefit packages have been too much, too fancy, but I certainly didn't think that you would be changing what people had already retired, what they were expecting throughout their life. They're not getting new jobs. They're not going to have other revenue available to them.
So I always thought we were actually in a race to change your benefit packages before you hired a new administrator so that they wouldn't be awarded those same benefits. So I guess I'm confused at how we got here and that so many people are upset by it. I think you really need to probably reconsider what was done in the earlier action. And then I have to agree that the accounting that's been in question at the district as of late, and these people are relying now having to rely on the district to issue their checks, would cause some trepidation. And so maybe you have sort of a fund, just like we're talking about with redundancy, where we are showing and being able to watch that money in an account that they know that money is going to come to them. So those are my thoughts.
Okay. Anyone else? I'm going to close and bring it back to the board. And Mr. Karp, could you, just a clarification, I know that Mr. Allen had asked if we could delay voting on this reso tonight, and then I think Ms. Spear had said we need this in order for the payments, for them to receive payments. So can you just clarify or confirm where we are with respect to timing on this?
On behalf of the district, I apologize to Aaron for the lack of communication. I can assure him that the amount of subsidy that he will receive under the resolution, if adopted tonight, is going to be the same as what it was. I'm talking about dollar for dollar. Before he wasn't notified, if I will say something like that, it's an awful thing to say. And I apologize, okay. Aaron. I'm not trying to hide the ball here. But certainly what was stated, that if you do not adopt tonight, these people are going to have a two-month premium to pay, and it's probably going to be out of their living expenses because you don't meet until, 2 weeks from now. And you'll miss the deadline for the first two premiums. So okay. That's what's going to happen.
Okay. Jim, do you have something?
Well, first of all, I'm sure our retirees, I know not only Mr. Allen, Ms. Spears, I know has provided excellent service to the district over many years, retired out of the district. And I'm very concerned that people did not receive notice, apparently, of action that is coming before the board tonight. Is there a way that we can authorize the payment for to meet the deadline, to make sure that we meet that, and then table the rest of the item until we can make sure that affected people are notified and that we understand what we're trying to do? I agree with the commenter that people who've already earned a benefit under up until the time they retired, it would not be my intention to change that. Well, we may look at benefits and the merits of benefits going forward. Changing that on retirees is not really a place I want to go.
We may have misunderstood the board's direction to put a cap on this. There is nothing being cut other than the growth. There is no growth towards that 15%, as Ms. Spears brought to your attention. She's concerned that, okay, let's say you're agreeing to this fixed figure. She's worried that another board, maybe not you, will change that to, let's say, 65% or $133 or any of those things in between. They can't go lower than the $133. That's what her concern is. And you can assure her that you're not going to do that but I don't know that you can bind another board.
I agree with you that this board can't bind another board, but we can set a precedent, I think, for you know, living up to commitments that were made in the past.
Yes. The commitment to the, that resolution was that it would grow to 100%. Now, maybe we misheard you, but we heard that you wanted to cap it, and you didn't want it increased. So that's what we went out and negotiated.
Mm-hmm. The capping the growth.
Yes.
Yeah.
But the payments up to now would maintain would be continued, and if you adopt, we can ask the attorney, but I think if you adopt the resolution, that's what you're adopting. If you adopt a part of the resolution, I can't assure you that's going to happen. You know, make a payment but not do this. It's really just getting to this point. You may, let me just share a little history, and I'm not trying to make an excuse for any of us here, but we really didn't have a settlement with SEIU until the last second. And all of that drove this other stuff. So we couldn't get those prices before we got a settlement. Now, again, this is unfortunate, but I can assure you that Rick and I have been working night and day on this particular item. And we have a CalPERS expert working with us also. The reason for the number of changes to the warrants were just that very situation. Primarily, all of those changes had to do with input that we'd received from various annuitants, recalculation, making sure we're using the right rates, and you know, we're trying to get it right. We are going to get it right, and we will make those payments on your behalf should you direct us to do so tonight.
I think we should move forward tonight, and if something needs to be renegotiated, you go back and renegotiate it. Or we go back and renegotiate it, because if we don't act tonight, there is, I think there's a real risk for them. And I'd rather see this and then and not try to piecemeal a new resolution tonight.
Well, and I would agree with you, and I think, Paul, thank you for that clarification, because we were talking about capping the growth. So we certainly don't want to cause further burden on these retirees, and so I think we do need to move forward tonight. I would also just say that, just from my perspective, as long as I'm on this board, this resolution, if it is adopted, you know, I would certainly say we need to abide by this. But it does get to the issue of you can't bind future boards, and so a new board will come, it may come in. CalPERS or any of these others may, and we're having to deal with these in our respective jurisdictions where, you know, CalPERS is lowering basically interest rates or they're doing things that are going to affect what we have to pay. So I can't give you that assurance, but I can certainly give the assurance that if this is a resolution that's adopted, that as long as I'm sitting on this board, we will live by this. I know that's probably not the long-term assurance that you would need, but hopefully we can put language and hope that whoever comes on this board will respect this. I don't know what else we can legally do. So, legal counsel?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First off, there was a letter prepared to the retired annuitants, and trying to explain this process and the hearings that were coming up to put them on notice. I don't believe that letter has made it out of the office, and we will rectify that. So there's quite a bit of confusion by the retired annuitants, and rightfully so.
Okay.
The matter before you tonight, you know, has been thoroughly vetted by staff, and we're making this recommendation to go forward tonight so that you have the least impact on your retired annuitants. Our recommendation is not going to change if you were to table this item. And if you do table it, as you have correctly identified, you would impact your retired annuitants.
Okay.
So the recommendation is to go forward. As far as vested benefits, I haven't been asked to research that, but I know in general that future benefits can be reduced by future public bodies, unless it's in a contract, which is binding. And in this case, we do not have a contract with the retired annuitants. So this board is free to cap the cost at 2017 rates. A future board can take different action, and depending on the financial health of the district, you know, that could be a possibility, and so it shouldn't be, you can't guarantee it is what I'm trying to say. Yeah. But you certainly can say today you will take every step to honor it.
Okay. Someone want to? Okay, hold on a sec, because I haven't opened back up to the public, so.
Do you want me to make a motion?
No. I'm just going to do something a little out of the ordinary, out of the order, because I know you haven't been here before, and this is important. So let me open this back up. Why don't you come on back? You can come back up and make a comment if you like.
I understand what counsel said. Moving forward, to make this clear, whenever you are recruiting, I think that should be made known to any of your future employees, that you may have a resolution out there saying that this is what's included with your retirement, this is a benefit. It should be made clear that this benefit can be rescinded at the whenever the board decides to. Yeah. As it stands now, we looked at it as a benefit.
Gotcha.
And it can be used for recruitment.
Okay. Since I've reopened this up, is anyone else from the community would like to come forward?
You have to forgive me. I'm a little bit ignorant of the definition of annuitant. So are the former district board directors, are they considered annuitants? Or is it just employees that are full-time workers? Because I would say if it were the district directors, you should just make a list and figure out what they're worth, you know, considering, you know, the past actions or lack of action by some of the directors and the administrator. And this is a written request for an accounting of my wastewater and sewer bills. And Amy, it's in
all right.
To you.
Great.
Hopefully you'll have a copy machine. I want a copy.
Thank you.
Thank
all right. Thank you. Anyone else? Seeing no one come forward, let me bring it back to the board. And
make a motion. We approve resolution 2017-382, approving district contributions for retired annuitants enrolled in CalPERS health benefits under the Public Employees Medical and Hospital Care Act.
Okay.
I'll second that for discussion.
Okay, there's a second. Discussion? Go ahead, Jim.
I would request that the board at a near future meeting rethink this, how this applies to retired annuitants.
Okay.
But I will second the motion.
Okay. Sounds good, and I'm in agreement that we should.
I see nothing wrong with that either.
Okay.
Yeah.
But we will have to coordinate with legal and the expert who's working with us on this. So with that.
Is this going to open us up to more negotiations with the SEIU?
I think we'll have to get a report back from the staff, and that'll be what are the benefits, what are the implications. So that's a discussion for another night. Tonight the resolution's before us. Roll call.
Chairman Scholes?
Yes.
Director Hill?
Yes.
Director White?
Yes.
Motion carries unanimously.
Very good. At this point, let's take a 5-minute break. We're going to reconvene at 8 o'clock.
I don't sign these, I won't get the chair.
Okay. We are going to reconvene the South Sand District meeting. We had just concluded item 6D, so let's move on to item 6C, which is consideration of approval of our personnel policy manual. Mr. Karp.
Yes, Mr. Chair and directors. We have before you consideration of the revised and the I believe that this was brought to you by Mr. Sweet at the last meeting with a continuation to tonight. We believe we've made the changes that and cleanups that we had to do since the last meeting. And I think rather than going through the manual itself, I would like to leave it to questions and comments from the board, and we'll try and respond to those the best we can.
I can say that I actually sat down and read the entire manual, and then I had some questions because it seemed very, very draconian. You know what I mean?
Draconian.
And then I got to thinking about it, and if you want the job, you follow the rules, in a sense, even though fraternization, it seemed fairly strict, but it's no different than setting working hours, setting pay. It's all part of the job. And at least having worked in places where there were no rules, and I worked 12 hours a day for 8 hours pay, I appreciate the fact there is a set of rules which binds everybody, the management and the employees. So there.
Jim, you have anything?
Yes, Mr. Chair. This is very discouraging to me. I would inquire if Mr. Karp and Mr. Sweet had substantial contribution to this, because, which I doubt. This is another, I don't know how else to say it, it's a Gerhard Hubnerism. Starting with chain of command and draconian. Thank you, Karen. I'm not the only one that noticed that. There's too many errors in this to even consider. And to add insult to injury, there's many places where it says that employees are expected to be able to communicate in written form using correct English, correct grammar, correct spelling, correct punctuation. The errors in here are rife. And it's an embarrassment to me to see this document before us. But I would suggest that this is probably beyond the pale and needs to start with some objectives for our policies. Like I've indicated in the past what I consider the important things of the district. That's number one, industrial safety. We don't want to kill anybody who's working at the plant. Second would be operate the plant in absolute full conformance with all license requirements and legal requirements, including the Brown Act and the Public Records Act. Third, redundancy, because we need to assure compliance with our license now and in the future, and hopefully that we can move toward recycling. And fourth, to do those things in an economical and efficient manner. Those would be my four objectives. Going through it point by point, it doesn't apply to temporary employees. I wonder why most of it that wouldn't apply to temporary employees. It says any announcement of changes would be made through standard communication channels. Well, we saw with our retirees tonight that our standard communication channels are apparently lacking. And I would like to see exactly, I would say by copy,
to a written copy to each employee. The definition of hourly and part-time employee makes no sense to me. We have returning employees. They talk about re-employment. The probationary period for returning employees, if that's the same as re-employed, I'm not sure, is longer than it is for new hires. I don't understand why that would be the policy. Chain of command, again, how about district organization? I would like to see the district move from the rigid, draconian command and control that we saw in the last tenure of an administrator to be said district organization. Purpose of the policy is to establish the nepotism and fraternization policy. Then we define divisions. I don't know if we have, does a single purpose agency have divisions? We might have a department. Would the lab be perhaps a department? I don't know. I don't think this has been well thought out. I guess we're going to look into the bedrooms of our employees now and see how they're related as defined herein on page 2. Related is defined herein. So I go to the definitions. I invite you to go there. There's no definition of related. This is so bad and so embarrassing to me as a director that I could go on if you want me to go page by page by page, but I cannot and will not support this.
Okay.
I didn't think it was that bad.
Draconian.
Hey, look,
I was just going to say something about sexual harassment and harassment. I thought it pretty well spelled out all that, which, as if we look at the news at all, we realize that has been tremendously lacking. I would rather have worked under this as it stands today than some of the situations that I did hold a job in, and I'm talking about a professional job, a college graduate job.
I respect your comment, Karen.
It's a good start.
Let's do this. It is a start. I know there's members of the community who have comments, and I know that Ms. Victorine had come up and asked about it at the last meeting, so it is a draft, and we don't have to take action on this, but I think we want to give the public an opportunity to comment. So with that, let me open this up. And feel free to come forward, whoever wants to come first.
Colleen Kubel. Purpose of a policy manual is to define each and every little tidbit of the organization and how the employees are to act. And to make some of those stipulations so general and not defined enough that it becomes a gray area is a problem. And it really needs to be defined, and I suggest that you need a committee to go over this and some other input to go over this also. And I know that there's been a lot of work done on it, but it has to be so defined and so clear-cut that there is no gray area before you do anything on this policy manual, because it goes forward from here. And it defines whether we're going to be in the same situation as we have been because of a lack of a good policy manual, or if this corrects the problem. It needs to correct the problem, and it shouldn't be so general that anybody can come in and interpret it any way they want to. Interpretation is so important in what you're reading in your policy manual. Thank you.
Is anyone else?
Good evening. I was a yeoman in the Navy, and we did a lot of different little, put together a lot of different little policies like this. And the best thing we ever did is whenever we'd go ashore, we'd hit whatever the shore agency was there. We'd find out what their policy for a particular thing was. And after about four or five of them, we'd put them together, and we'd have a kind of a synopses of all of them that work for us. And that's what I would suggest you, and maybe you go to San Luis and Santa Maria and the other districts and find out what their get their policy, their personnel policy. Look them over, find out what they've done right, what they don't do that you want to do, and start over. And that's a good place to start over.
Anyone else?
Julie Tacker, and, you know, when this was in the works and Mr. Huebner was still here, he was adamant about bringing you the entire document. When you could have, and I recommend that you still do, go through it chapter by chapter. There are 8 chapters currently. Let's say you break it up to 2 chapters per meeting, and sometime next year you'll have gone through them all, and you'll weed through and clean this document up. The idea that you look at other wastewater districts is a great one. Policies and procedures are pretty much available in boilerplate form. Your district is not that unusual or unique that it needs some of this crazy language. Ms. White was speaking specifically to the draconian nepotism policy. I just don't know what is the problem with people that work together, unless it's affecting their work, having a relationship. Unless it's affecting their work, then it's okay. You see, we've seen in history, Oceano, for example, Phil Davis and Gina Davis were married, and they worked. She was in the office, he was in the yard. It went on for a long time. I don't know how many years. Many, many years. Supervisor Gibson and Sherry Espiro, McKee, whatever. It doesn't affect their work, and they're still together, and they're still there, and I think they're married now. These people can date, and it's not going to affect their work. When it does, then something has to change. And that's up to the administrator to call them in and see, you know, if this is really going to be a problem. And absolutely not should the supervisor be fraternizing with somebody that's beneath, under his authority. That doesn't work. But this is too much. Policy 3030, Chapter 3. There is compensation. Item 1B, page 1 of compensation. The district administrator shall have the authority to place an individual at step B or C upon reviewing their experience and making a determination that said step B or C salary is in the best interest of the district to provide at the time of employment. The chair of the board of directors shall make the decision to hire any employee at step D or higher, and would only do so after reviewing recommendations made by the district administrator with respect to the employee's experience and value to the district. No way. Not one of you gets a say in anybody's salary except your contractors. So there, that's glaring to me. There's references to the chair, and I mentioned this 3 weeks ago when we had this in front of us. When there's a complaint.
Okay. 30 seconds to wrap up.
When there's a complaint and it involves the district administrator, that the complaint then goes to the chairman. It says in here that the chairman will then engage legal counsel or the HR. That is engaging an expense. The chair, if this complaint has to go to the chair,
then the chair needs to call a special meeting or call a closed session and take it to his board, who will then engage the attorney or human resources. This thing is a mess. And again, I encourage you to take it two chapters at a time into next year.
Anyone else?
I don't know much about nepotism law because I haven't seen any in the county. But I get an idea that it's really important to have a nepotism policy. If you take the example of the Davises, Gina Davis was the bookkeeper at one time. I think she was a general manager there. And her husband, Phil Davis, ran the water yard. So Phil Davis was generating charges and submitting bills to his wife, Gina Davis, who was in charge of the bookkeeping. And Gina Davis was relied on by the district board officers to be submitting bills for them, you know, to sign the warrants for the payments. That's a problem. I think there should be a nepotism problem, a policy that would kind of separate out relationships like that, because I really do think relationships really can affect the running of a district. But how you do it, I don't know. But your young men over here had a good suggestion that I think is applicable. You know, you're going to have to explore what the nepotism laws are in other places and come up with something that works, where there's obvious conflicts of interest. I don't know how you do it. Good luck.
Thank you.
Chris Victorine. I'm looking at section 4090, military leave, and the policy provides up to 17 days of job-protected unpaid leave to employees who are a member of the Reserve Corps. The law requires employers to provide reservist time off for military duty. Most public sector agencies show support for their reserve employees by providing paid military leave for at least 15 days for their annual training. Many California state agencies provide 30 days of paid military leave. Our country relies heavily on the Guard and Reserve Service members. Members have provided support for continuous military operations for more than 14 years, aiding in our national security. I urge you to recognize their sacrifice and not only comply with the Uniformed Services Employment and Reemployment Rights Act, but also to support military reserve employees by providing 15 days of paid military leave a year. And then in 5010, grievance procedures, I question the effectiveness of the procedures, specifically if the employee's immediate supervisor is the district employee. The proceedings state that if employee is not satisfied with the level one, with the outcome of level one discussions of the grievance, the employee may advance to level three. Well, level three states that an employee must present his or her grievance to the district administrator, who has already heard the grievance and made a decision that the employee didn't agree with. Then the district administrator makes another decision. And if the employee is not satisfied with that second decision, the grievance then goes to the state, to state mediation. The advisory decision of the mediator is submitted then to the district administrator. Then the district administrator shall render a final and third decision on the grievance of the same employee. I see no separation of duties here. And additionally, added to the policy is payment to the mediator. If the district administrator sticks to the level two and three decisions, then the district and employee shares the cost of mediation. I've never seen where an employee is responsible for the cost of a grievance. Given more time, I would have checked with other agencies to compare policies. As mentioned before, a thorough review of an almost 200-page document takes time and should be presented in sections to ensure a careful appraisal. And then finally, last board meeting, I did mention what section was it? 7050 on the bookkeeper or secretary employment standards, that the requirement was for a GED, which I have a problem with. If you want a bookkeeper, a GED is probably not enough and could cause errors. And then it also states that they want 30 college level coursework units in accounting. And it should really be specific about whether those are semester hours or quarter hours, because that makes a big difference in the level. So thank you.
Thank you for those comments. Is there anyone else? Let me close this up.
Well, there, all of that was really, really interesting. I just had one thing. Where it says remedial action will be commensurate with the severity of the offense. However, the level of action will not be communicated to the complainant. Rather, the complainant shall be notified that the investigation was concluded and the allegations' findings were determined to be unfounded, exonerated, sustained, or not sustained. I don't understand that language. Then, before that, something that I think I agree with, but because I don't understand this language, I'm not sure. I might not. It says the district will not disclose a completed investigation report except as it deems necessary to defend itself in adversarial proceedings. And I took that to mean when, say, we were in the public proceedings here, we questioned what an investigation was about, then they could disclose the completed investigation report. And I've asked repeated questions about the different investigations that were initiated by Mr. Huebner, and I would like the report as to what the results were and what was the product of the tens of thousands of dollars that we spent on investigations. I would just like some satisfaction. And what I read there seems like it says I could get that satisfaction. So tell me if I'm wrong.
Is there anyone else? Okay. Seeing no one come forward, let me close this to the public. And a lot here tonight. So, Paul, can you maybe discuss who worked on this document?
Yeah, Rick has been working on it with a consultant. We've involved an attorney. We've involved the SEIU who has reviewed it. Sounds like we're not quite there unless...
Okay. Well, I think it's important to note that this is a personnel policy manual. This is not an operating procedures or standard site standards. This is personnel, and the role is obviously to identify the rules, be clear, so that we can protect the rights of employees and certainly protect the district. And so it's a draft, and I think if this board wants to go chapter by chapter, then that's what we'll do. I don't have an issue with that. I just, you know, it would be nice if we could have a conversation with civil tones. I mean, people are trying to do the best they can, contracting with folks who have done this elsewhere. And so then let's roll it out. And, I mean, I've been with cities who've done that before. They've done a much longer general plan, and they went chapter by chapter, verse by verse. And if that's what the board wants to do, then I'm fine with that. So,
I would support that. I mean, if you feel it needs that much work, I'd have to read it three or four more times
Fine.
But I've got a big red pencil. I mean, right. I think we should then individually, if we're going to do a couple of chapters, individually, seriously read it and come back with things marked so that they can be questioned.
So what I'd like to see is let's see if there's a motion to continue this to a date uncertain and with the direction and the thought that we will take a look at this, whether chapter by chapter or however we're going to do it, because it really starts to become more of a working session. So I think rather than us belaboring the issue tonight, I mean, obviously, Director Hill is not a fan of what has been submitted. I know that there are some language in here regarding state law. And I have to say, I'm almost I'm flabbergasted in this environment where we're talking about sexual harassment and misconduct, and we're saying that, I don't know. I guess bottom line is that I think, Ms. Naylor, you said we need to have a policy and we need to make sure that, I agree. If someone's not reporting to someone, then they could maybe have a relationship. But, you know, it's a very complex matter, and it's a delicate slope, and we certainly want to get out of business of litigation and paying lawyers' fees. So I'm just... Anyway, it's been a long night. It's been a long day for me.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I would just say let's continue this to another date, and we'll do this two chapters at a time, let's do two chapters at a time, or however the board feels is best to move forward.
We got the audit coming up the next meeting.
That's our plan. We hope to have it for you.
Well, I was actually going to suggest we gave everybody a Christmas gift and not make them come here on December 20th.
Could I say one more thing about fraternization?
Sure.
It's not those two people. It's the other people that have to work with them.
Oh, that's true. That's good.
It's really difficult when your boss is making it with a secretary in a hall closet and you know about it and you're trying to get your work done.
All right. We're good. We're done, Jim.
I don't think anyone questions the need for policies. I would just observe a couple of things. One of the speakers mentioned that there's several responsibilities of the chair of the board that involves funding and so forth. And with due respect, I think that's got us into a lot of hot water in the past. And I would reiterate that all directors have equal authority as a unit body, not as a single director or the chair, other than to run the meeting, of course. But I would also observe that the general tone of this is completely negative. It's always don't, no, can't, must not, rather than outlining conduct that we want to see. It's always phrased in the negative, and I would hope that we could be more positive, actually.
I'm not seeing it here. So I'm going to move that we continue this to a date uncertain, and that we take this chapter by chapter. Maybe we do two chapters at a time, but I do think we want to make sure that the experts who have put this together can provide us input on what is typically seen in these kind of documents, what is legally defensible, because they certainly don't want to be writing and adopting something that puts this district in even more legal harm and legal jeopardy. So my motion is that we continue this to a date uncertain, and then when we come back, we will take it chapter by chapter.
I second that.
Okay. Question, might we consider delaying it until the first meeting of January?
That's why I said date uncertain. That means basically we're going to let staff do their jobs. They're going to talk to the consultants, but I don't think we need to bring this back on the 20th.
Well, I don't want to see it languish either, because I certainly do agree with the need for up-to-date personnel policy. So that's why I was hoping we might, rather than a date uncertain, which tends to, we've had a date uncertain with all due respect for the audit for quite some time, and we've been promised that over and over and over, including the 1st of December. So I'm a little reluctant to entertain a date uncertain.
Okay. So then I'll withdraw my motion.
Well, I can withdraw my second. I don't know what we're doing.
Make a motion.
I would move that we bring the personnel policy manual back to the board in two chapters at a time, commencing with the first meeting of January.
Can I make a comment?
Please.
Yes.
My concern is with other business, because I don't see this as having as high a priority as the audit, or maybe something having to do with redundancy or some other things. And I think maybe a meeting in January, started in a meeting in January, and we can figure out which one of the meetings, in case one of them has a really high packed agenda.
Okay, I will amend my motion that we bring it back during a meeting in January. But I note that although redundancy isn't done, the audit isn't done, you regard this as not as important. This was done.
Okay. You want to second that motion?
Second that motion.
Okay, there's a motion, then there's a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None. And I am going to say, Jim, you make a statement as if the chair has gotten us into a situation. Bottom line is that legal counsel gives us legal counsel, and we are trying to protect people's rights to privacy. And so there are reasons that there are procedures in place. It's not something that any chair wants to be involved with, certainly not me. So I take exception to that.
Well, I believe that there were illegal activities that came to pass, including direct interference with personnel. However,
that's not a true statement. But you know what? That's not a true statement.
Point of order. Let's move forward.
So I would just say at this point, since we've completely, I know it's been a long day for me. Is there anything else on this agenda that absolutely has to be acted on tonight? There is, and legal counsel, can you discuss the issue of the closed session? I understand that's a placeholder. There is no item.
That is correct. It was placed there as a placeholder in the event that we had new information to report. We do not, so you can cancel the closed session.
Okay.
The only other matter is an operations report. So basically a receive and file.
Okay.
So move.
Go ahead. What do you have?
Okay. Mr. Chair and directors, we have before you the operations report and the technical consultants report. Rather than go into detail, the italics were the ways that we have been historically adding to the report. The report by this acting superintendent indicates that we're meeting standards, and we have nothing else to add unless you have questions.
Very good. Any questions of staff?
No.
Anyone from the community want to comment on this report? Of course. Why don't you make your comments on this
item? Okay, I understood that there was only this item left, and that's not so. Okay, I had a question about the odor complaints that the plant received on the weekend. Oh, Thanksgiving. I'd like to better understand when the biosolids were removed off-site, they're removed off-site. As a matter of course, have we had complaints before when we've done this activity? That was one question I had. And the other thing I was seeing is that the training, and we are
heightened and aware of sexual harassment. And through some public records requests, I found that your entire staff was delinquent in its training. And that's changing. I'm happy to see that. But that is not because I did this public records request. Just want to be clear that that's the state law that the training has to take place. And just so there's no confusion, I didn't want to trigger that. I just wanted to see that it all had been done. Because when I'd asked for it before of Gerhard Huebner, he told me that his training certificates were in his personnel file. Turns out he didn't take the training. So I just wanted to be sure that everybody was compliant.
Is there anyone else? Can anyone come forward?
I have something, but I don't know that it's in the staff report. It was about a letter from an insurance company.
That's a different item.
That's a different, yeah.
Okay, this is receive and file.
Yes, sir.
So you've got a written communication.
There are two pieces of communication from SDS, from the insurance people. One is an award for safe operations, and the other one is the bylaws of the committee that they have modified, and we're just letting you know. I put in your file a marked up, line out type change to those bylaws. It's an informational item.
Okay.
I would like to commend the staff for the safe operation that engendered the letter from SDRMA. Thank you to all the staff for making that happen.
Karen, you have anything?
The only thing I have, not on that, no.
Okay.
Board communications is all.
Okay.
This is a question about the insurance and the... I'm hearing that it's because of safety there were no claims. No one was hurt. And I was wondering exactly what kind of insurance it was, because we had two settlements that were paid out, and I was wondering if the insurance paid any of that, if it was that kind of insurance. I was not clear about that.
Okay.
And if it is that kind of insurance, why aren't there any claims?
Julie Tacker, and I think this is, and I can't tell, is this an annual report or is this a fiscal year report? Did these claims get paid out in some fiscal year? Because the two claims that Ms. Price is speaking about were quite recent, October and August. So I don't know that they would be reflected in a letter from September 19th. They wouldn't be. So, but the claims, and we got this letter in Los Osos last year, and this, not the five-year award, that's actually quite commendable. Kudos to South San. But the annual letter, I have seen that in other agencies. When... We've seen general managers, I've seen quite a few, rise to the level of a payout. Those don't get submitted as a claim to SDRMA, and that you're really avoiding having a mark on your record by just paying that person to go away. And so it's not that there wasn't damage to the district during that period, but that the insurance company wasn't engaged and didn't have to pay out of your insurance premiums. I would be curious, if some of these recent settlements could be turned over to insurance, and if they would cover it, and that perhaps you might pay a little higher premium over the life of your insurance policy, but
the amount of money that you've paid out recently has, I don't think it would compare. So it'd be interesting to know if you could submit those claims.
Anyone else? Seeing no one come forward. Okay. Board Member Communications.
I just wanted to say I was sorry I was late to the meeting.
Yeah. It wasn't that bad. Do you have anything else?
No.
I don't either. We're adjourned. Mm-hmm.